just a few days out from Christmas. And what better for an Animal Rights show than to have a Christmas song about an animal? So that was The Little Donkey, who, of course, carried Mary to Bethlehem, plodding away there with his heavy load, faithful little donkey. Nomai Hairimai, Ko Sandra Kailaho, and you're listening to Safe and Sound, a radio and podcast show that we bring you every week, covering some aspect of animal rights, animal welfare, and biodiversity. We record the show at Free FM in Hamilton, and we're played throughout the country via the Access radio sector. Our sponsors are Village Organics and Frankton Village, so if you're in Hamilton and you haven't already checked it out, why don't you pop down to Ian and Vendor Store, which is located just opposite the Frankton Hotel in Commerce Street. Maybe pick up a few vegan treats to share with your family and friends during your Christmas celebrations. Well, this week we were hoping to have the Right Honourable James Shaw, Minister for Climate Change, on the show, but unfortunately we weren't able to because of a hectically busy schedule the Minister has right now. So we thought we'd go with the topic of climate change anyway, and I asked Paul Judge, who is very knowledgeable about this, as well as a lot of other things, and I asked Paul to come in and have a chat with me about climate change and how it's affecting, in particular, polar bears and penguins. And we'll hear that chat in just a moment. I've just Googled this information, and in 1950, the population was 2.5 billion. And in 2017, it's about 7.6 billion, more, nearly 7.7 billion. So on its way up to 8 billion. That's a lot of people to be demanding Earth's resources and fossil fuels, which of course contribute greatly to global warming. So it's human activity that's driving up the Earth's temperature. And we can see fundamental changes all around us. For example, here in New Zealand, we've been experiencing February weather in December, and personally have no doubt that this is one of the results of man-made climate change. So it's a very critical question, not only for us, but for our fellow species. And it seems to me that there's not a lot of action. Governments and business leaders and individuals really need to take it seriously by changing laws and behaviours that will help to reduce individual carbon footprints. For example, the vegan diet that I have means that my carbon footprint is less than half that of someone who eats meat. And it's worth noting that if people began to eliminate meat from their diets or eat less of it, it would greatly reduce the impact of global warming. That is affecting not only us, but other animals also. One of the effects of climate change is that ice shelves melt, oceans become warmer, and this is affecting iconic species in the poles. Let's go now to the chat that I had with Paul. Paul, what's happening in the Arctic?
What is happening is quite an alarming rate of sea ice loss. There was a study done just the last few days, actually, where it worked out that the sea ice is disappearing faster through the Arctic winters than even through the summers. So that previously there was a sort of big fear that we're going to have a summer in the Arctic that's ice-free. Well, now they're actually observing that it's happening at a faster pace through the winters, so the winters themselves.
How does that work?
I would say it's to do with the feedback loops.
What are feedback loops?
Well, the Arctic is a major feedback loop of climate change. We get to a point where the temperature rises to a point that sets off a chain reaction that is unstoppable because certain factors speed up the warming of temperature. So what we're seeing in the Arctic is with the loss of sea ice, you know, sea ice reflects sun's energy back out into space. With the loss of sea ice, ever increasing each year, the ocean is absorbing more heat and warming faster.
Yeah.
And so we're getting this acceleration of sea ice loss.
And an acceleration of effects for the biodiversity in,
well, that's
in the
exactly
Antarctic.
Right.
So that was the Arctic. And what about the Antarctic?
I think that generally, from what I understand, is that the sea ice loss is happening at a different pace to what's happening in the Arctic.
Slower.
Slower pace. It's happening, but it's happening a bit more slowly, and there's so much bigger vast chunks of ice there. And what's actually, what I understand is happening, is that the ice is melting from underneath. So the ice is getting thinner. I know that's happening in the Arctic as well, but it seems to be the major thing that scientists are noting with the Antarctic, is that the ocean sea ice, which has been incredibly thick, is getting gradually thinner, so that it's going to become more susceptible to breaking off. And we saw that just a month or so ago, didn't we? We saw a massive ice shelf break off.
I've seen many illustrations in children's books and so on, and it shows penguins and polar bears together, but in fact they don't share the same pole, because polar bears are in the Arctic and penguins in the Antarctic.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. And of course polar bears and penguins, they really are iconic species, aren't they? And I think recently a crushing video of a starving polar bear. I looked at the still, but to tell you the truth, I just couldn't watch it. Tell us about that.
Oh, very heartbreaking footage. It was shot by a wildlife photographer, forget his name, Nicklin, I think was his surname, and he was up there in somewhere around the northern part of Canada, filming a bear that was encroaching upon human habitat and you know, close to an outpost, and it was foraging in a rubbish bin trying to find food. It couldn't find any, and it was absolutely ravaged with hunger. It was a skeleton walking. And he filmed it. It went viral on social media, of course, and it's caused a big ruckus in the mainstream media as well. He was accused of not feeding the bear. You know, what would you do in that situation? Would you keep filming, or would you try and rush off and find some food for the poor animal? He claims that he didn't have any access to food, and he didn't have any access to put the animal down humanely. And so he just kept filming with the idea that if he let the world know that this is actually what's happening. And also he mentioned that it's illegal to feed the polar bears in Canada. And that's, of course, because they have so many problems with bears coming into human contact. Yeah, it was a heart-wrenching bit of footage. It was really sad.
I saw another article about around 200 polar bears who were feeding on the carcass of one dead whale.
Yes,
and the fact that they would have come from far and wide to get something to eat shows that they are starving. So just in terms of climate change, just explain why they are starving.
What's the main prey of the polar bear is the seal. There's a seal up in that area called the ringed seal, which breeds and lives on the ice, basically. Polar bears eat up to sort of five of these a week to survive. And, of course, with the disappearing ice, those seals are not there available for them to hunt. So
because the seals don't have a habitat either.
That's right. So it's a loss of
ice. And receding ice is also affecting the habitat of the polar bear and every other species.
Yes, including the walrus. You know, I've done some brief reading on that. They're the same. You know, they're changing their habits to come ashore on land, in land areas rather than ice. So the loss of the sea ice is the crucial factor for these animals. What's interesting about this whole discussion is, of course, that footage of the starving bear has reawakened an interest in this whole idea that we might need to feed the polar bears into the human intervention on a massive scale.
What are we going to do? So kill animals wholesale to feed them?
Well, that's the terrible thing. It's a bit like when you feed your cat, isn't it? You have to buy cat food. There's a scientist, a biologist called Andrew DeRocher from the University of Alberta, who put forward a plan as far back as 2013, which really was only 4 years ago, isn't it? But apparently there was a major loss of sea ice in the Arctic in 2007, and this instigated this report that he wrote on this, putting forward a plan to use helicopters to airlift food to the bears. You know, we're talking about a population of about 20 to 25,000 polar bears in the Arctic, and that's spread across about four or five different countries, isn't it? Canada, Alaska, right. Greenland, right. Norway, Russia.
But 25,000 is quite a decent number, isn't it?
It is, but it's not as many as you would think, is it? You know, you'd think there might be more than that. But anyway, he's putting forward this plan, and he's costed it out as being, this is back in 2013, you know, $32,000 per day, but only aimed at the most accessible bears and only required for a few days of the year, because you've got to remember that polar bears don't eat every day. They go for months and months without food. So he's put forward this plan. He gave a recipe. He calls it bear chow, quote, ground corn, porcine meat meal, fish meal, dehulled soybean meal, corn gluten meal, ground soybean hulls, porcine animal fat, preserved, dried beet pulp, etc. So he's sort of even put this plan forward to include, you know, this kind of polar bear version of cat food. So, and as Durocher says, a polar bear will be a semi-wild, semi-captive, free-ranging carnivore. So they won't really be polar bears anymore. And of course, the big risk factor there is that they lose their skills to hunt. And he's talking about doing this until the sea ice returns, if we can manage to contain greenhouse gases. But unfortunately, that doesn't look as though that's going to happen anytime soon.
I've always believed in helping wildlife by feeding them, and even more so when they're suffering because of man-made climate change. It's quite interesting, Paul, isn't it, the difference between polar bears and brown bears. Offspring of a brown bear and a polar bear are viable. They can reproduce. And polar bears have evolved from brown bears, and they've got some evolutionary changes, including hollow hair shaft and smaller ears, small and round, and that conserves the heat better, helps to keep them warm. They've got short compact tails, so they've got body modifications to conserve the most heat possible. So it's an evolutionary story, isn't it, how polar bears have come to live in the Arctic areas.
Oh, and, and that to me is the biggest tragedy. We've got these animals that have been on the planet for hundreds of thousands of years. Even penguins as well, you know, they've been there for tens of thousands of years doing what they do. And it's just criminal. Within the space of 200 years of human industrial civilization polluting the atmosphere, we're destroying these iconic creatures that have been on the planet for so long. It's sort of like the end of evolution in many ways. It's just, it's a momentous tragedy.
In terms of the species becoming endangered, looking at the polar bear, if the polar bear is starving, they're not going to be able to reproduce as well, and that's going to affect the numbers. And also, I was reading about how climate change is affecting walruses. The loss of stable sea ice means that the female walrus, who normally leave their young on the sea ice while they forage, because the ice is receding, the mothers are having to swim further and further away to find the food, meaning that the babies, the newborns, are having to stay longer on the ice without food, and the mothers are becoming exhausted by long swims, and the time alone that the calves spend means they're more susceptible to prey or to dying of starvation. So there are multiple ways that even a slight warming of the sea temperature is affecting our biodiversity.
And we've seen that with the penguins. Get back to the Antarctic, the other side of the planet. The Adélie penguin, which is the other penguin next to the emperor penguin in the Antarctic, just a slightly smaller penguin, is in serious risk. There was a study done just last year by the University of Delaware, and they were doing analysis of 30 years of colony data from 1981 to 2010, identifying population trends. You know, one colony site near the US station down there saw declines of over 80%.
Wow.
You know, it's just horrifying. And, you know, using statistical models to derive relationships between colony population and climate and sea surface temperature and sea ice concentration. So it's pretty rigorous science. And so you can't argue with this. It's like climate change is affecting these animals. And the number one thing is the loss of sea ice, again, the biggest threat. So that there's the habitat loss and the availability of food. There's the loss of
the two things.
The two things. Yeah. The habitat loss and the loss of their prey. And so what's happening with the krill and the fish in the Antarctic, of course, is they're noticing certain declines in populations because of the thinning of the ice, because krill breed under the ice and so on. And as the oceans warm, the fish species that are living there move into different parts to sort of try and find colder water and so on. So there's these kind of shifting relationships in this hundreds of thousand years of balance of the planet. Mm. It's all being caused by us.
In Antarctica, the climate is cold and dry, and it doesn't rain there, or not very much. Am I correct?
Yes, and one of the problems with warming planet is that there
be more
predicted
rain.
To be more rain, and not only more rain, but melting ice. So that's going to affect the chicks in the nests, because
penguins nest on the ground, don't they?
Yes, they nest on the ground,
and
so
they'll be
in puddles of water.
And they won't be viable. They'll die.
They'll die of hypothermia and things, and because they don't have waterproof feathers at that age. And so these are the sort of changes that are occurring to wildlife. I heard a biologist talking about moorpawks. You know, the ruru, which is our native moorpawk. People will know the problem is occurring where, because of the rise in temperatures of this hot summer we've just had, you know, beginning of summer I should say, hot December like February, the mother moorpawks are throwing their baby chicks out of the nest because the too many chicks will heat up and make it uncomfortable and, you know, risk the lives of the other chicks. So she'll pick up a chick and throw it out.
Goodness.
And of course, here was the scientist pleading with people to, if they ever find a baby moorpawk on the ground, to pick it up so it doesn't start after death or become prey to another creature. So apparently they've found sort of like 12 chicks in the last little while. It's terrible.
It's really sad. I'm really surprised, I must admit, that moorpawk parents do that to their chicks, because when you consider the persistence with which they call to each other, or the male calls to the female to try and mate in the first place. I've got a couple of moorpawks near where I live. One of them has found a tree on my property, and he will call the whole night until he's hoarse. And so at 5 or 6 in the morning, he's still calling. And, you know, I'm sometimes laying in bed thinking, oh, please, will someone answer him? He's so persistent. Please, female moorpawk, can you please come along and relieve this guy? it's so many ways that climate change is affecting our biodiversity. I don't have numbers in front of me, Paul. Do you know how many species we're losing every year?
Well, Professor Guy McPherson talks about the fact that we're losing between 150 and 200 species a day at the moment.
That's worldwide.
Worldwide. Yeah. We're talking invertebrates, insects and so on. But that's a horrific figure. And it's about, the extinction rate is roughly about 1,000 times the background rate of extinction in this current climate that we're in, of what scientists have called the sixth great extinction since the late 90s, when Professor Leakey wrote the book The Sixth Extinction in 1998. He coined the term the sixth great extinction.
Okay.
So since then, we've become more aware of the declining numbers and biodiversity worldwide. And of course,
man-made.
A study found that we've lost half the world's wildlife in the last 40 years. You know, so it's all related to this, what's called the great acceleration of human civilization. Since about 1950, they say that 1950 is the key year for all the key indicators that go up on a hockey stick curve, right upwards. You know, we're talking CO2 emissions, deforestation, we're talking toxicity of the environment, we're talking the growth of fast food restaurants, for example. Everything's on a hockey curve, straight up, and it's an exponential growth curve. It's not no longer a curve, it's a straight line going upwards, and that's what they call, you know, the great acceleration. And we're just decimating the planet with this sort of virus-like growth, which is not taking into account all the other species that have got a rightful place on this planet.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, when scientists and journalists and so on, when they speak about biodiversity loss, they're talking in terms of groups, this group of animals, these mammals or these insects or whatever. But when I think about animals dying out, I think of individuals.
Of course.
I think of individual animals.
Experiencing pain and suffering.
Not what the figures show in terms of how many in a certain species have died in any one year. So if one dies, for me, it's sad. Yeah, it's the individual animal. It's people like you and I, Paul, don't focus on statistics, and we're not happy to sacrifice groups of animals such as possums, for example, for another group of animals. We try to find way to save individuals, because basically individual lives count. They count in the human species and they count in other species.
I've done a lot of thinking about this recently, you know, since the death of my goat Rosie, and it was heartbreaking to witness that, her going through that suffering. And I think you know, when I saw that footage of that polar bear, you know, that individual polar bear suffering was soul-destroying to see.
Yes.
And I think you have to think in terms of the individual animals, and I think that's one of the big problems with anthropocentrism is that we've given rights to humans as far as we can across, you know, huge, amazing progress in that respect since the end of slavery and so on. And the next big frontier is the rights of animals and recognizing the rights of animals as individuals, as sentient beings with a right to life and a right not to be imposed upon and have their lives
devalued to the extent that we sacrifice the only life they'll ever have for our taste buds, for the fleeting pleasure of food on our plate. Our thanks to Paul. I know Paul would like to join me in wishing all our listeners a very happy Christmas and happy holidays to all. And of course, it wouldn't be safe and sound unless we had the message on behalf of other animals that reducing your meat consumption in the coming year will be a good thing for your health and for the planet as well, of course, as for the animals. So feel free to post any messages on our page if you'd like to discuss any of the things that we covered today further. Facebook page, Safe and Sound Radio Show and Podcast. And if you haven't already liked our page, please do so. We'll have another Christmas song, this one quite a cheerful one, about Rudolph, who, as everyone knows, also lived up there in the Arctic. Until next time, folks, Matiwa. Bye-bye.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you wouldn't even think it grows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? Then how the reindeer loved it, as they shouted out with glee, they said, Rudolph, your red-nosed reindeer, you go down in history. Thank you. foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, he said, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, could you guide our sleigh tonight? Then how the reindeer loved him as they shouted out with glee. You should have heard him. Rudolph, your red-nosed reindeer, you'll go down in history.